Good afternoon. This is Ken Fix on, where am I here? Yes, I'm on KTOO 104.3 in Juneau. It's 2:59 p.m. It's time for a Juneau afternoon. Today on the show, we'll talk with Kyle Pickett about this weekend's Juneau Symphony Concerts. We'll get a preview of this Friday's Audible Art of Place, taking place at the University of Alaska Southeast. We'll get the scoop on this weekend's Jump Society Film Festival. We'll talk about Monday's Alaska Food Policy Town Hall Council meeting with Darren Snyder and Sarah Lewis, and Mark Lillard from Eagle Crest will talk about the Terrain Park. All this, some music, Bird Note, Writer's Almanac, and more on a Juneau afternoon for Wednesday, January 29th, 2014. Stay tuned.
Antonia Gonzalez. President Obama laid out his agenda last night in the State of the Union to lawmakers and the country. His speech highlighted the Native American-owned business, Detroit Manufacturing Systems. The president praised it for creating jobs and boosting the economy. Company president and CEO Andra Rush was a guest with the First Lady. Crow World War II veteran Charles DeCrane was invited to the event by Montana Congressman Steve Daines. And as Matt Laszlo reports from Washington, members of Congress reacted to the president's priorities.
The president laid out an ambitious agenda. He wants to increase educational opportunities and set up new economic zones to help spur job growth, like the recently announced one with the Choctaw Nation of Oklahoma. The president also says he wants to help tribes create jobs by investing more in clean energy programs in Indian country. South Florida Democratic Congressman Joe Garcia says it's important the president focus on efforts to get people out of poverty, like with his call to increase the minimum wage.
If you work 40 hours a week, if you sacrifice, if you do all the right things, and you're still falling behind, there's something wrong in the economy. The compact that we've always had with our people, that if you work hard and play by the rules, you can get ahead. And that's not true for many working families in America.
The message left many Republicans bristling, though, because the president is promising to bypass congressional opposition to his agenda by using more executive orders. It's an election year, and if reaction to the State of the Union address is any indicator, this year promises to be heavy on politics and light on bipartisan legislation. For National Native News, I'm Matt Laszlo in Washington.
Tribal priorities will be addressed Thursday from Washington as the National Congress of American Indians holds the State of Indian Nations address. Tribal leaders and members of Congress are expected to attend. A coalition of First Nations in Canada's Yukon Territory and conservation groups are suing the government over a plan to open a vast region to development. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, they say the plan violates land claims.
The region is called the Peel River Watershed. It's large, more than 45,000 square miles, and it encompasses seven rivers in the Yukon and drains into the Mackenzie River Basin in the Northwest Territories. The Yukon government wants to open this region of Canada's north to mining and industrial development. The government's energy minister says the remote area has the potential to be of great value to the territory's economy, now and in the future. And he insists the plan, while recognizing mining interests and future exploration, also provides the government with tools to manage the development and protect the ecological, cultural, and wilderness values. But First Nations say the decision violates the provisions of a land claims agreement the territory has already signed, and an original plan that took 7 years to create. Many took to the streets to protest. Norman Snowshoe is the vice president of the Gwich'in Tribal Council.
What they're doing is there's no support for it in the communities. Their implementation of their proposed plan, you know, they just basically ignored the wishes of the communities, and this is our way of expressing our frustration.
Under the original plan, more than half of the land would have been protected. Under the new proposal, more than 70% would be opened up to industrial development. The lawsuit was filed this week in the Yukon Supreme Court. The lawyer for the coalition says it's a lawsuit that no one wanted to bring, but they were forced by the Yukon government to go to court in defense of First Nations rights and environmental values. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
Yeah. In January, Native people hold an annual commemoration at the site of the Bear River Massacre near Preston, Idaho. This year's commemoration includes speakers and a drum ceremony. On January 29, 1863, U.S. soldiers attacked Shoshone people. Hundreds of men, women, and children were killed. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. National Native News is made possible with support from Guest House Anchorage Inn. Wake up with the sun, on the web at guesthousealaska.com. When you file online for your PFD, every Alaskan can support National Native News. Just use Pick, Click, Give and select KNBA-FM, Kawanic Broadcast Corporation. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska. Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
You're back on KRNN. Correction, that's KTOO 104.3 in Juneau. It's 3:05, and in the studio with me, I've got Kyle Pickett. He's going to talk to us about this weekend's Juneau Symphony concerts. Welcome, Kyle, to the studio. Thanks for coming.
Thank you very much. Always good to be here.
Okay, and what are you doing this weekend?
Well, we've got a really fun program this weekend. We are, you know, ordinarily we do a season of three classical concerts, then we do a pops concert in June in the early part of the summer. But this is an unusual year because this is my final year as music director of the Juneau Symphony, so we decided to make my last concert the same program as my first concert, which was a wonderful program with the Brahms Piano Concerto and the Pines of Rome. And so we're going to do that program in June. And so we moved our Pops concert to this coming weekend. So we're playing music of the Wild West this weekend.
Okay, all I can think of is like saloon music and somebody saying,
yeah.
Dance, rolling, blowing off a six gun.
Well, close. Actually, it's not that far off. We are doing, I think, some of the greatest film scores ever written are film scores for the Western movies, old Westerns. And so we're doing two suites from Westerns. We're playing The Magnificent Seven, which is by Elmer Bernstein. And we're also playing How the West Was Won, which is by Alfred Newman. Great film scores. And then we're pairing those with Aaron Copland's Billy the Kid, which was actually a ballet, but is I think the piece that really established the sound of the Old West. And Aaron Copland was so good at that. You know, his Appalachian Spring, his rodeo, but Billy the Kid probably more than anything set up the sound of what we think of when we think of the sound of the West. And so we're playing that ballet suite. We're also playing a suite of tunes from Oklahoma, the Rodgers and Hammerstein great, you know, musical, first musical about cowboys, as far as I can tell. And then we're also playing the Grand Canyon Suite by Ferdy Groffet. So those are all our Old West selections. And then we're also featuring our Youth Concerto Competition winner, Ethan Side, who's a senior in high school here in Juneau and has been just a really, really marvelous young player throughout town, but in the symphony, and he's playing a movement of a Mozart violin concerto. So that's the other part of our concert.
That sounds fabulous.
Yeah, so it's going to be a lot of fun.
And this, something that's unusual because not too many people tackle the Wild West theme.
I know, and I think it's a natural for the orchestra because that's definitely, you know, you think sci-fi, they might have, you know, orchestra soundtracks. Some of them do, certainly. But, you know, Westerns, that's real orchestra territory. And I should point out that there are a couple things that are different than a normal concert so that people can remember them. First of all, we're at Thunder Mountain all weekend. So both of the performances, Saturday and Sunday, are at Thunder Mountain High School at the auditorium there. Saturday night is at 8 o'clock, which is our normal Saturday night show. Sunday there's a little thing called the Super Bowl on Sunday, and for better or for worse, for our symphony audience, the Seahawks are playing, and you know that's the home team here. So we decided to move our concert early. So our concert is at 1 o'clock on Sunday afternoon. That's 2 hours earlier than it usually is. So 1 o'clock concert on Sunday. And because this is the Pops concert, I'm not doing a pre-concert talk, which is, that's, you know, most concerts I do a pre-concert talk an hour before. But during our Pops concerts, I talk about the pieces while we're playing them. And so no pre-concert talk. And then on Sunday afternoon, just to go along with our Wild West theme, if you come to hear the concert on Sunday, we're having a chili feed, cowboy chili feed beforehand, where the board members for the symphony are doing their best chili recipes, and that's at noon, and that's free to anybody who comes to the concert on Sunday. So kind of a neat weekend of activities for us.
Sounds like a great idea. Otherwise, if you hadn't moved it earlier, you'd have been playing for the crickets.
Yes, and you know, I know there are some people who are not interested in the Super Bowl, but you know, we figured that this would give people a chance to do both if they want to on Sunday.
Certainly. What's been the reaction to your musicians when they found out that you were going to be leaving? Because you know, now you're doing a Pops concert, and you know, I kind of want to know how they feel about your departure and how they feel about the music. This is a rather upbeat
as a fun
note
concert
to go out
it's,
on.
It's funny because you know Pops music tends to be lighter classical kind of things, and Pops music is so hard. It's film track, film scores, Pops music really is challenging to the orchestra, and Billy the Kid is a challenging piece, Grand Canyon Suite's a challenging piece, so they're working very hard. They're doing a great job. We had rehearsal last night, and I think it's going to be a really, really good concert, really fun concert, but they are working very hard to prep for this. And as far as, you know, my leaving, this is it's a very bittersweet thing for me. I last year won two new jobs, actually. So I've just taken over this year as the new music director for the Springfield Symphony in Springfield, Missouri, and also the Topeka Symphony in Topeka, Kansas. And so I am in my last season here in Juneau and in the North State Symphony, which has been my orchestra in Northern California.
Right.
And I, you know, as a lifelong West Coast person, you know, I will miss terribly the mountains and the pines and the, you know, the ocean and the people. We are excited about the new, you know, adventure as a family. We've moved the family out to Missouri, and it's a nice career move for me, but it certainly is. It's going to be bittersweet leaving Juneau, and you know we'll never really leave Juneau. We'll keep coming back to Juneau. I've been doing this for almost 14 years, and we have so many friends and people who are like family, and in this community we love this community. You know, I got off the plane, and this has been a long stretch. I hadn't been to Juneau since last June, and I got off the plane, and I just felt like I've kind of arrived back home. Which is a good feeling.
Well, you're also lucky because this weekend was so foggy. I think one jet got in 2 days.
I was pretty fortunate, and the people I was sitting next to on the plane, they'd been trying for 5 days to get back into Juneau.
Oh, yeah, you know what that's like.
And so, no, it was very smooth. But, so it's a bittersweet thing. I mean, I love the players in the Juneau Symphony. We've you know, worked together and you know, built this orchestra for more than a decade, and you know, I've seen a lot of I've outlasted a lot of players, which surprised me. I mean, I've seen people come and go, and it's just it's a very special orchestra in a very special town. But we've got, you know, three more concerts together. This is my 53rd concert with the Juneau Symphony. So I've done a lot of programs with Juneau and Juneau musicians, and I was talking today. I looked back at all those, and you know, there's not a single one of those concerts that I'm not proud of what we did and the performance that we put on and the effort and the work that the players have put into it. And I think that's part of what makes this such a special orchestra is that it's truly an orchestra of the community and for the community. And The players are putting an enormous amount of their time and energy and effort into playing these great performances of music for people here in Juneau to make Juneau a better place to live.
Okay, Kyle, well, we're certainly going to miss you, and thank you very much for coming into the studio. And we won't rule out you coming back.
Oh,
maybe,
no.
Maybe there might be a summer session sometime in the future.
We'll be back, that's for sure. And like I said, there are three more concerts, including this one on Saturday and Sunday, and I hope people come out. They're going to enjoy this a lot.
Thanks again for joining us in the studio, Kyle.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, it's 3:17. You're listening to KTOO 104.3 in Juneau. I'm Ken Fix, your host for A Juneau Afternoon. And with me in the studio, I have Ernestine. And she is, actually, it's Ernestine Hayes. And she's going to talk about the Audible Art of Place, which is going to take place at the University of Alaska here on the 31st. And welcome to the studio, Ernestine. How are you?
Thanks, Ken. I really appreciate this opportunity to remind the Juneau community about our annual Art of Place series. We're kicking it off on Friday with our first of our monthly events that take place through the spring semester. Each year we have a different theme, and this year it's Audible Art of Place, loosely structured around the pattern of a ceremony. So we begin with oratory, and then in February, we're going to go on for history telling, and in our February event, local elder Ed Coons is going to be there, and another speaker that hasn't confirmed yet. In March, we'll have Audible Art of Place song, and Liana Wallace and Lyle James are going to talk to us about the importance and significance of song, and Liana will be sharing some of her knowledge about research and preserving old songs from 100 years ago. And then in April, we're very fortunate that Sharon Shorty is coming down from the Yukon, and she's going to be doing Grandma Susie in the celebration part of our series. This Friday, though, we're having Paul Marks, local Tlingit elder, very respected, will open the ceremonies with a welcome to the community, and will also be joined by Standing Rock Sioux writer Susan Power and another artist from down south by the name of Galway McCullough.
Okay, and are these going to be presenting any of the Tlingit tales as we go through this session, or is that going to be spread out over the course of the 4 months?
Well, I'm thinking that probably the February event, Telling History, History Telling, I'm sure will involve some reminders of the stories that are wrapped around historical events, which is where our stories come from, actual history. And then I'm thinking, no doubt, the song portion in March will also have stories, because the stories, the history, and the songs are all attached together. And so I think stories will be woven in and out of all the events.
Okay. And do you want to give a little bit more background on Susan as far as coming down and being a guest speaker and storyteller?
Sure. Susan Power is, she and Galway McCullough have been the artist-in-residence for the Island Institute in Sitka all month of January. They'll also be appearing at the downtown library on Saturday at 6, and Galway will be doing a workshop in stagecraft at the Rec Center at 11 o'clock Saturday morning. On Friday, they'll both be talking to us about oratory traditions from down south. Susan is an award-winning author. She won the Penn Hemingway Award for her first novel, Grass Dancer. She's also won awards for her other books, Roof Walker. She has another book coming out in February. She began her creative writing career by attending Iowa Writers' Workshop, which is a very prestigious school. And before that, she earned a Juris Doctorate at Harvard Law School. So she's got a lot of knowledge and a lot of experience to share with us this week.
Right. That's a good reason why I asked you to cover her credentials. She's pretty impressive. Okay, and would you please remind everybody when this will take place and where it will take place?
Sure. It's Friday morning from 10 o'clock till about noon. We're very casual, so we're having coffee and so on after. It's 10 o'clock in the Glacier View Room at the University campus, in the Glacier View Room on Friday at 10. So I hope everybody comes in, helps us kick off this event.
All right, Ernestine, is there an admission charge for this at all?
No, it's free to the community.
Free to the community. Hey, we don't get a whole lot of free events, so please come out and attend that one. It should be fabulous. Ernestine Hayes, thank you very much for being my guest in the studio today.
Thank you, Ken.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday. It's the 29th of January, 2014. It's the birthday of the writer and revolutionary Thomas Paine, born in Thetford, England, 1737, and the novelist and essayist Edward Abbey, Indiana, Pennsylvania, 1927. It's the birthday of the man who said, "Comedy is a serious business," and that was W.C. Fields, born Derby, Pennsylvania, 1880. a very skilled juggler who honed his art to get into the carnival and then into the movies. W.C. Fields, who said, if I had to live life over, I'd live over a saloon. It's the birthday of Anton Chekhov, born in Ukraine, 1860. Planned to become a doctor, in fact started writing as a way to make money to support his family while he was in medical school. He wrote comic sketches for magazines, and then, in spite of the rigors of medical school, and in spite of his very active social life, he managed to be quite prolific. He even wrote a novel, The Shooting Party. Finished medical school, worked as a doctor for 8 years, and though medicine was his chief occupation, he kept writing. In 1892, he bought an estate 40 miles outside of Moscow, moved to the country to write full-time. Over the next 6 years, he wrote short stories mainly, but also the play The Seagull. At the turn of the 20th century, he focused more on plays for the Moscow Art Theater of Stanislavski, though he and Stanislavski had very different views of his work. Chekhov saw his work as comedy and Stanislavski as pathetic tragedy, especially The Cherry Orchard, Chekhov's last play. Even though Chekhov was seriously ill with tuberculosis, he went off to Moscow to try to tell them how to do it, how to perform the play. It had its premiere in 1904, January the 17th, and even though Chekhov was convinced that Stanislavski had completely misunderstood the play, it was a great commercial and artistic success. A few months later, Chekhov went to Germany to a spa on the advice of his doctor, suffered a series of heart attacks. The doctor offered him sips of champagne, which was supposed to be beneficial to people with heart conditions, and Chekhov remarked that he hadn't had champagne for ages. He then turned on his side, closed his eyes as if to take a nap, and he died. Here's a poem for today by David Shoemate, 100 years from now. I'm sorry I won't be around 100 years from now. I'd like to see how it all turns out, what language most of you are speaking, what country is swaggering across the globe. I'm curious to know if your medicines cure what ails us now, and how intelligent your children are as they parachute down through the womb. Have you invented new vegetables? Have you trained spiders to do your bidding? Have baseball and opera merged into one melodic sport? 100 years. My grandfather lived almost that long. The doctor who came to the farmhouse to deliver him arrived in a horse-drawn carriage. Do you still have horses? David Shoemate's poem, 100 Years From Now, from Kimonos in the Closet, published by University of Pittsburgh Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. And by Lumosity.com, a brain training program designed by neuroscientists that has been used by 50 million people worldwide. More at Lumosity.com. Engineered by Noah Smith and produced by Joy Biles. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Tonight on 360 North at 8 o'clock, Anywhere Alaska visits Denali, Mountains and Milestones, and takes to the water at 8:30 with Marine Highway, Fish and Festivity. At 9, the Miller Center Forum discusses Peter Baker's book, Days of Fire, Bush and Cheney in the White House. Gavel Alaska is back at 10 with the day's legislative coverage. Tonight on 360 North and 360north.org. Follow 360 North on Facebook and Twitter.
Welcome back to a Juno Afternoon. It's 3:28 p.m., and my guest in the studio now is Aaron Suhring from the Jump Society Film Festival. Hi, Aaron. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on.
No problem. And would you please tell everybody what the Jump Society Film Festival is about for anybody that has not attended previously?
Yeah, it's a series of short films, all locally made or produced, have some connection to... Yeah, we only have two rules. It has to be Juno-based, and it has to be less than 10 minutes. And so we have a collection of films that we're showing. We do it every 6 months, and it's this weekend. We're ready for another one. So it'll be down at the Goldtown Nickelodeon, and we have shows Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Friday and Saturday, we have 7 and 9 o'clock shows, and Thursday is just the 7 o'clock.
Okay, and the deadline for submissions already passed, so nobody that has anything at this point is going to be able to run them on this airing, the
right,
ones that
they
are coming
still
up.
Bring them in, and we'll show them again in July, because we do it every 6 months, and we're already ready to start accepting submissions for that one. But for the meantime, let's focus on tomorrow. It's going to be fun.
Okay. And do you have any of the entrants that you want to share anything about what they're what they're about that have already got lined up?
Sure. Yeah, there's just about 20 submissions, and we're going to run probably a little over an hour and a half, hour 45 minutes, somewhere in that range. But there's some really, I think it's going to be a really great, one of our better shows. Arlo Midget submitted one where he travels. He spent a year and just traveled around the world. And he went to McDonald's in 27 different countries and filmed what was different about them.
Oh, the menus.
They have some things that are the same. Like the Big Mac is pretty much the same everywhere else. But they have all these like variants that are localized. And it's really kind of fascinating to see like... What the differences were. There's some like really high scale McDonald's, and there's some that are about what you would
pretty
expect.
Pretty lowbrow. Yeah. All right.
Yeah. And so that one's gonna be really fun. And there's another one that I think is gonna be pretty fun. It's Corin Hughes Scandies did a. It's almost. I don't know. It's a really funny piece. It's about a black bear. There's a guy, one of his guys dressed up as a black bear, and he has a garbage problem.
Running through the trash.
Yeah.
Okay.
And, so it actually kind of takes on a broader social issue, like addiction issues and stuff. But it's just really funny along the way.
Okay, great. And remind everybody where they can get tickets and also the fact that this is something else that is free in this town.
It is free. We take submissions or donations at the door, and we always appreciate that to help pay for the theater and that kind of stuff. But, yeah, tickets are free. They're down at the Alaska Robotics Gallery, which is on 220 Front Street next to the Gross Theater between there and the Viking.
Okay. And the shows, again, are going to be on what days?
Tomorrow, Thursday, we have a show at 7, and then Friday and Saturday, shows are at 7 and 9.
Okay, and again, here's another free event at the Nickelodeon Theater. Aaron Suhring, thank you very much for being my guest in the studio.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Support comes from Southeast Living Magazine, Southeast Alaska's real estate, home, and lifestyle magazine, working to reach potential home buyers and featuring articles on the unique lifestyle of Southeast, available online at seakliving.com.
This is Bird Note. Birds are the only animals in the world with feathers. And it turns out, feathers can tell us much more than just what kind of bird we're seeing. For example, scientists have learned surprising things about the lives of American redstarts by analyzing their feathers. After breeding, redstarts migrate to the Caribbean islands and Middle America to spend the winter. During migration, they molt some of their feathers. Scientists use redstart feathers to determine migratory paths. They can do so because stable forms of hydrogen in rainwater, called isotopes, change with latitude. Hydrogen isotopes are incorporated into the tissues of plants, the insects that eat the plants, and eventually into animals, such as redstarts, which eat the insects. The hydrogen isotopes in redstart feathers tell us the latitude where the individuals were when they grew those feathers. In addition, The more intense the color of a male American Red Start's feathers, the better his chances of holding a good winter territory, which means access to good nutrition. Being well-fed and in prime condition, once he gets to his breeding grounds, he's more likely to attract more than one female, and his mates are less likely to cheat on him. Ah, the many tales one can learn from a bird's feathers. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
You're listening to KTOO 104.3 in Juneau. This is a Juneau Afternoon. I'm Ken Fix, your host. With me in the studio now are Darren Snyder and Sarah Lewis from the Alaska Food Policy Council. Hi, Darren. Hi, Sarah. How are you?
Very well, thanks.
Okay, and what exactly does the Alaska Food Policy Council do?
That's a good question. I'd like to also add that both Sarah and I are with the University of Alaska Fairbanks Cooperative Extension Service, and as employees of the Extension Service, we're able to contribute to the Alaska Food Policy Council and be members. As each of you are in the listening audience, the Alaska Food Policy Council, our vision is to promote a healthy and secure food system that feeds all Alaskans, and each one of us are part of that vision. So the Food Policy Council is attempting to have each person who sees themselves as part of the overall Alaska food system be able to weigh in and to contribute what they think would help to improve that system. I'd like to, you know, the Food Policy Council has been going for about 3 years now, and it's a coalition of groups, of organizations, of individuals who are working towards strengthening Alaska's food system.
Okay, and what impact has this had so far as the food supply in Alaska?
Oh, that's a good question. What we've done is we've promoted different policies, as the name implies. There's an element of policy change that for policies that do promote a stronger food system. Last legislative session, we were in strong support of the HB1 and SB1, which was to support getting the Alaska Food Resource Working Group, which is the governor's working group, together. And so what that is, and this is just an example of some of the work that we've done, what we've done with that is to be a participant at the table with each of the heads of 8 different departments within Alaska. And these Alaskan departments are looking at how food runs through their systems, what's their role in Alaska's food system. So I'm not really prepared to give you the full dissertation on that, but what it is like looking at Department of Natural Resources, Department of Military Veterans Affairs, Department of Corrections, Department of Education. And so who are they as consumers of Alaskan foods? How can we increase the amount of Alaskan foods that's going through these different departments? How can they, say, within the Division of Agriculture, do things to support more local food production? And so we're supporting getting all these different players to talk together, and we're, as the Alaska Food Policy Council, at the table with these different departments to weigh in as kind of the grassroots representation. So that's where we want to get people's opinions, perceptions, ideas to come forward to support the Alaska Food Policy Council, and your part as an individual consumer, or if you're a grower, or anybody having to do with the food system, to come and to let us know what we can do to support this entire system. And one of those ways is an event that's coming up here, and that is a town hall meeting. So coming up on Monday, this next Monday, February 3rd, We are holding a town hall meeting starting at 6:30 at the JDHS Commons, the Juneau Douglas High School Commons. Please come at 6:30 on February 3rd, so that's next Monday. And we are holding these town hall meetings. The Alaska Food Policy Council is sponsoring these meetings so that we can get opinions and, again, perceptions and ideas from different members of the community to let us know what's working, what's not working.
And in this case, what's interesting is not just on a statewide, but for our local town hall meeting is really talking about Juneau. So that's one of the things that the Food Policy Council does or is starting to do more of is actually reach out to different regions and communities to help us start to really assess what our needs and future might be around issues related to food.
Okay, Sarah, my concern that I brought up to you before we went back on the air was the refrigeration of goods that are coming up here via barge. Do we have any kind of control over those systems? And, you know, with the contractors that are bringing goods up, who monitors that?
I can't speak to that specifically, and that's one of those really great questions that could be brought up at the town hall meeting, because shipping, of course, to anywhere in Southeast is a huge issue when it comes to our food system, because that, to a very large extent, is our food system. And so having ideas of what might happen if that system were to become unreliable or were to break down for some reason, or what you're talking about in terms of whether the contracts are appropriate for us, et cetera, those are all really valid topics.
Yeah, because meat and dairy are, you know, have to be refrigerated, and you sure don't see any cows around here.
Not so. Anymore. There used to be a lot.
Yeah, so it's
not
a rather
anymore.
A large concern as far as, you know, spoilage, how our food actually arrives here. You know, because it doesn't come in on Alaska Airlines. There's a very little of it. But
or
you know,
if it had to, it would be very expensive.
It'd be very expensive. But, yeah, most everything comes up on a barge, and you know, most everybody realizes that there are certain days when food changes hands in this town as those goods are delivered and products are changed out within the grocery stores that we do have here.
Yeah, those are all great points.
I'd like to add that the issue that you're speaking of, whether it be storage temperatures during transit or at our vendors or whoever's storing our foods, that does become like a food safety issue. And Department of Environmental Conservation is responsible for monitoring and regulating different aspects of that. But when we talk about food safety, we also a lot of times people use the term food security. And these different areas within our food system are important individual segments. And then there's something that within food security, people, there's the term food insecurity. And so that's what food insecurity is, and that the Food Policy Council is trying to address, is day-to-day hunger issues. People who don't have access to adequate, nutritionally appropriate foods on a day-to-day basis. And so there, we have a group, within the Alaska Food Policy Council called the Alaska Food Coalition, and they're helping the Alaska Food Policy Council sponsor this town hall meeting, and in fact they're having their annual meeting coming up here to work with the legislators to work on those hunger issues. And I just like to parse out a little bit that food security term. When we talk about food security in Alaska, people have different perceptions on it. One is how much food do we have available locally to consume that is healthy food? You know, we can increase that in various ways. We can grow more food. We can produce more food locally, but that's very challenging. And then one of the other elements of food security is emergency food security. And that's a specific topic that I personally am working statewide on. And we have a number of tools which can help communities address the if they want to make sure, if we want to make sure that we have enough food on hand, if the supply is disrupted for any amount of time, then there are methods that we can employ to do that, which are not being employed anywhere in Alaska.
Okay. Are you hinting about things that may occur in natural disaster situations, also as tsunami? That's a very possible danger that we have here in Southeast Alaska, being this close to the water. You know, everything arrives via the water, with very few exceptions. Alaska Airlines may bring a few things in, but most everything arrives on a barge.
Yeah, and you know, it's there. We could each come up with a whole list of things that may impact transportation and cause a disruption in the food supply for different amounts of time, and that's some more work needs to be done with that to have real credible scenarios. But when it comes down to it, regardless of the cause, if we're not prepared, then it doesn't matter what caused it. We're still sitting here hoping that we have enough food for whatever amount of time it is. And so those are some issues around the emergency preparedness that we are doing. And this is so broad. We're talking about the entire food system when the Food Policy Council is addressing it. We're talking about fisheries, talking about production, agricultural production, talking about transportation. And if you have opinions about this, if you want to be heard about your perceptions and your experiences, Ken, you're mentioning the spoilage potential and what you may have experienced as far as freshness of our foods, please come and be heard at the town hall meeting. And that's what we're trying to do is to then compile this and invite you to participate and then also just figure out how to move forward to try and help strengthen the Alaska food system.
Well, hopefully we get a big turnout for this because it is an important issue. And I guess people take for granted that food just arrives on the shelves every week and don't give a big thought to exactly how it got here and the process that it takes to get here, yeah. Especially our refrigerated items. And again, something like a tsunami that would occur, if that indeed would happen, to a coastal city like Sitka, how much would they rely on us, as far as relief efforts in order to augment their food source?
Those are really important questions, and those are important considerations. Absolutely. There are a few other things that, if we may, do we have a little bit of time to share with you some of the other things that we're doing?
A good minute, certainly, yes.
Do you want to go ahead,
Sarah?
Oh,
sure. Thanks. So we at Extension, we're sort of at the local level of the whole food policy and food-related issues. And so I wanted to let people know, for example, about there's going to be a class coming up, a four-week class or four classes, starting and operating a specialty food business. And so these are the types of classes that it would be really good for people who are interested in focusing on either producing or growing local foods to be able to learn how to turn that into a business if they wish to go to farmers markets or other markets, et cetera. And so people can give us a call at the office at 796-6221 and talk to us about different workshops that might be coming up that have to do with small business and food businesses.
Okay, Sarah and Darren, remind everybody when and where the town hall meeting is.
Okay, town hall meeting coming up here is on February 3rd, Monday evening at 6:30 until 8:30. Please join us.
Okay, very good. Thanks for being my guests in the studio and everybody out there listening. It's not all just cheeseburgers in paradise.
Some kind of century street. Not good.
was the Blues Rockets with Cheeseburger in Paradise, made famous by Jimmy Buffett. That was a different take on it. It's 3:49. You're listening to KTOO 104.3 in Juneau. This is a Juneau afternoon for Wednesday, January 29th, 2014. My guest in the studio now is Matt Lillard from Eagle Crest. Hi, Matt. How are you?
Not bad. How about yourself?
I'm doing fine.
Good.
Okay, how's the skiing out there?
It's not bad. You know, it's been an interesting season. We're about 40 days into a 90-day ski season so far, and we've had some great powder days and some interesting, you know, other days. And while we haven't had a whole lot of snow recently, skiing is still quite good. We've got, you know, snow across the mountain, and depending on whether it's warm or soft and what the groomers can get to, skiing on different parts of the mountain. So overall, you know, I think people should know that we've got some pretty good conditions up there right now. We're coming into another kind of sunny, cold stretch. It's nice to see the sun. We're starting to get more of it, and it's getting higher in the sky, which is very beneficial to the skiing as well. And, you know, other than that, you know, people are hearing a lot of things around, you know, farther north, up in Anchorage, they're hurting for snow, and down south is the same way. Most of the people on the western seaboard and the west coast, in general, have not been all that snowy, but we still have one of the better base depths in the country, actually. And, you know, I just want to encourage people to come on up and get outside and enjoy Eagle Crest. It's been a great year so far. We're looking to the second half being cold and snowy.
Okay, and which runs are open so far?
Well, technically every run on the mountain is open, so it kind of depends on the given day whether or not it gets hard or soft. And you know, we had this week, past weekend, it was 50 degrees up at the top of the mountain, but unfortunately the sun wasn't high enough to make the snow very soft. This weekend, you know, with a little bit of rain that we had and hopefully some snow at the summit last night, it should soften up and more of the west side runs will be open. We're, of course, grooming all of our standard runs on the west or on the east side, like Motherlode and Willowa and Otter Slide, Chichaco. The lower mountain runs like Ego, Lower Hillaries, Sourdough, Trickster are all groomed. And then we've got the beginner area off of Porcupine, where, you know, last weekend was our 33rd annual Learn to Ski weekend. We had about 30 third and fourth graders come up for a free weekend of learning to ski, and it's a lot of fun to see see the people come up from Juneau that have never skied before, and kids that age have a great time. It's just one of those fantastic programs that Eagle Crest has, where we've got instructors and employees now who learned to ski 25, 30 years ago at the Learn to Ski weekend at Eagle Crest, and here they are now still in Juneau giving back to their ski area and their community. So it's just great to see programs like that. And then also we're looking at, we've got some terrain features up in the terrain park, and we're going to hopefully, you know, do more as we get more snow. Those things do take a little bit of snow to build. And, you know, as we get some more and we can work the features around, we're going to continue to change that up. But we, you know, the a lot of the teenagers and younger set have really been enjoying the rails and jump that we have set up now. And as we move into the season, we'll certainly try to do more of that. And I should also say that as we move into February, March, and April, events really start to pick up around the mountain. This year we're going to be having a rail jam out back of the base lodge on Muskeg. We're going to have a slope-style course and event somewhere up on the mountain and later in March. We're also going to hopefully have a banked slalom competition, as well as our annual Tugman race and our Slush Cup, which finishes off the season at the April 14th. So all things considered, it's still a lot of season left, a lot of excitement going on at Eagle Crest. Come on up and enjoy. And then finally, I'd say on the Nordic skiing front, unfortunately, we don't have enough snow for the lower Nordic loop, but we are now grooming the upper loop on a daily basis. And I think anybody that ventured their way up there over the weekend was blessed with some great conditions, some fantastic sunshine, and hopefully a lot of vitamin D and exercise. So we're going to continue to groom the upper loop until we've got snow in the lower Nordic loop, and then once we hit mid-February, we'll do both loops on a daily basis, assuming we have the right snow.
Okay, Matt, and you did mention the terrain park. For those people that are just used to downhill like me, what exactly is a terrain park, and how would people utilize that?
Certainly. So terrain parks probably got their start, I'd say, 15 years ago or so ago, really with the advent of snowboarding and bringing kind of skateboard type features and street features to the mountain. It features man-made jumps and then rails or boxes, which are, you know, kind of like modeled after a handrail you'd see walking down a pair of steps, and it's really grown in popularity. It's a lot of fun to do. you know, for us older set, it's not as popular and certainly a little more painful when you fall. But
that's the mortality thing that comes in. You know, you're a little bit more fearful of your life than you were when you were, like, in your teens and 20s and young and fearless.
Exactly. We don't bend as well anymore, and when we hit hard metal, it's not something we choose to do on a ski slope. But that doesn't rule out the younger set, and to watch them do it and watch them from the chairlift is a lot of fun. So we always like seeing that, and happy we can get those sort of features up for them.
Okay, and how is our snowpack versus some of the other areas? You did mention a few up here in Alaska that aren't open right now.
Yeah, like I said, we still have one of the deeper base depths on the summit of the mountain in the country. And as far as Alaska goes, unfortunately, I don't like to throw names out there, but I've been talking to my colleagues up at Alyeska and Anchorage, and they're closed at the moment. They're waiting on snow. Speaking with some colleagues down south in Mount Washington and British Columbia, they're closed without snow. A lot of the Tahoe areas are just skiing on man-made snow. So, unfortunately, there's this big upper ridge that is affecting how everybody's weather on the West Coast, and we're hoping that that drifts east of us and we start picking up some cold and moisture.
Well, the upper-level jet was supposed to even out and go more east-west across the U.S., so some colder air should start moving in here.
Right. Yes, that's what we're hoping for, that and moisture.
Okay. Well, very good. Thank you very much, Matt, for being my guest in the studio. And Eagle Crest is open for everybody out there listening and wondering if it has been with all the rain that's been going on. Yes, they're open. Yes, they have snow.
Definitely come on up.
The Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority encourages businesses and organizations to learn more about employing Alaskans who experience developmental disabilities, traumatic brain injuries, and mental health conditions. When you hire a mental health trust beneficiary, you're not just providing a job. You're providing an opportunity for them to showcase unique skills, a strong work ethic, and a desire to succeed. Learn more at mhtrust.org.
It's 3:55. You're listening to KTOO 104.3 in Juneau. I'm your host, Ken Fix. This has been a Juneau afternoon. Today's forecast, the rest of the day, is calling for mostly cloudy with some areas of fog. Highs around 40 degrees with some light winds. Tonight's supposed to be partly cloudy with some patchy fog, lows dropping into the upper 20s, and it's going to be cooler in some of the wind-sheltered valleys with winds shifting to the northeast at about 10 miles an hour. Tomorrow, believe it or not, is supposed to be sunny with highs around 36 and northeasterly winds at 5 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow on the Juneau afternoon, Shauna Strausser is going to be the host, and we'll find out about this weekend's PFLAG fundraiser snowball. We'll get the details on this Saturday's Tina Arts auction. We'll also get a preview of tonight's, it will be tomorrow night's, Governor's Award for the Arts with guest Ben Brown. And Nancy DeCherney will be here with Arts Up. That, Writer's Almanac, music, and more on Thursday, tomorrow, 3 p.m. on KTOO-FM. KTO operates in Juneau. We rebroadcast on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, on K269AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K201AM in Gustavus, K220BT in Hoonah, K210AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juneau, KTOO is on GCI Cable, digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. And support for the national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you. Thank you very much for being a part of our audience today. Take care.